Hey guys, welcome to the 124 Not Old Video Podcast, and I'm joined as usual by my co-host, aka the Legend Agent, my wife, Baja. How you doing, Queen?
I'm okay, King. What's up? I'm very excited. One of my favorites is going to be at the show today. Hey, before we go into the show, I just want to remind you guys that this show is brought to you by Trinidad Tobago, where you can buy the most fantastic furniture and appliances for your family abroad. This is amazing. Thank you, fans, for the love.
Thank you.
Yeah. You got to tell those sponsors. And I want to also remind everyone that this podcast is streaming on Spotify, iTunes, and it's available to be seen on 124notout.com and our YouTube channel at 124, as well as the CodifallCricketAcademy.com and MashTV.com. With your book.
Lovely.
Let's get into it.
We're everywhere.
You know, so let's go. What are we talking about today, more importantly? Who are we talking
to? Well, most importantly, we have a very interesting topic today that we're going to talk about, one that has been pretty much on my mind for a very long time, and I'm sure it's been on your mind and a lot of other people's mind. We are going to be discussing, should we or should ICC have legalized betting and gaming in cricket? I mean, that's going to be a very interesting topic. And no better person to help us discuss this than somebody who has played international cricket at the highest level. He has played over 70 test match, over 100 ODIs. He is captain his team as well, the West Indies team.
He's a former West Indies captain.
Former West Indies captain, one of the best wicketkeeper batsmen that I've come across. I had the pleasure of playing with him. And today I have the pleasure of welcoming to our studio, Dinesh Shatarangden.
good morning to all. Good morning, Baja.
Good morning, Rick. Nice, wherever you get this podcast, it's global. It's morning, nice morning, somewhere. Morning, morning.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. I'm good. Can't complain, you know. Super day today. It's a holiday in Trinidad. So, lots of things are happening in Trinidad.
Shame on me.
It's an Indian arrival, eh?
Oh, my God. One of my favorites. That means I would have eaten some doubles this morning. And some roti later. Oh my God! Yeah, happy Indian Friday Day. I mean, it's not going to be that day when this podcast airs, but at least we knew that we all know that Shatta came through on a special day and he made time for the 124 Not Old Podcast. Thank you.
Yeah.
Have a double, Sabi.
I'm not a big doubles fan, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The next time you hear, I will take you to the double stand.
Please, because I am a big double fan. I like it with tamarind chutney and a little cucumber chutney. My husband is not a big doubles fan.
No. I am from Jamaica, and it's very hard for me sometimes to eat doubles like that. I mean,
you mean I decided to.
Does he need a knife and a fork or something?
No, I give me a roti any day.
Yeah, they might. But he still doesn't eat roti from inside the room.
So we're going to get into it. I mean, Shatta, immediately, when you look at cricket and today's game, especially with the fast pace of T20, and when you look at all the games are playing, when you look at the sponsors, they're all betting companies all over the place. Mm-hmm. Do you really think that based on where we are now in cricket, that ICC should have legalized betting and gaming in cricket, considering the amount of match fixing and all these things that are going on? What is your take on this?
I don't think it should go down to that route. Cricket is a gentleman game. I mean, you know, with all these sponsors coming on board, you know, that's only for more corruption on one side of it, I would say. So it's very important. You want to keep this sport very clean and professional. And I think, you know, those sort of things only could, you know, bring a lot of players into disrepute where they have players will want to do certain things for the game, which is not good. Other than that, I think the game has gone to a completely different level in the last 10 to 12 years with the fast-paced game of T20 cricket.
Yeah. You know, I know as a former captain, you may not want to divulge this, but full disclosure, as your Asians, you know, and we never had this discussion privately. I just want to say that to everybody. But this is the first time asking you this question on the 24, not a video podcast. But have you ever been in a compromising situation as a captain, whether directly or indirectly? And how, if it happened, how did you handle it? Or how would you have handled it if it never happened?
Not as captain, but I had someone from India approach me, you know, to go to the mall, shop, get something done, you know, and then back to the hotel, had some drinks, and, you know, wanted to do certain things, like, you know, and I immediately said, this doesn't look right. Mm-hmm. Why would someone just approach you and, you know, would like to buy expensive watch or take it to the mall and shop?
And you're not a pretty woman.
And I was like, this, you know, why would someone meet you for the first time and want to do these things? So I reported it to the match referee. They, you know, the manager, they took it to the next level and they found out who was the people or persons behind all this.
Behind
and, it was not a good situation.
Because... I have a question. So have you gone to the mall and received all the gifts already?
No, I have not. Okay. I didn't receive any gifts.
You declined such offers.
I did decline, yeah.
Because you're not a pretty woman.
I have been around the circuit for a long time, and you know, it's very important to keep my name off those books very clean and clear. Mm-hmm. And it's not a good stigma.
Yeah.
But I mean, when you look at international cricket in general, I mean, definitely as a former captain of West Indies team and somebody who, as we would say, have the glove behind the wicket, you're the one seeing everything that is happening on the field. And of course, you would be probably one of the first people that they would look to approach, because it's like you controlling the game. Outside of being the captain, you're the person controlling the game when you think about who's supposed to go where, who's supposed to bowl, who's supposed to do this. And it's very important that you have your head on like that. But do you think in terms of like other countries where players are not being paid as well as, say, Australia, England, or India, players are more susceptible to these kind of approach and even taking these bribes?
I have no doubt. You know, young players who, you know, grew up in poor rural areas, who's trying to make a name for themselves, I think those are the younger players who they go after, who probably are opening batsman, a bowler, as you mentioned, a keeper. You know, they target some of the main guys. Sometimes they go after their captain, you know, X, Y, and Z, we need two players to do something for us, you know. And these guys, you know, they come with cash, 50, 60,000. And these younger players who never seen this amount of cash before, they will gravitate towards it and think, you know, yeah, this is a one-off maybe. But from the time you start doing something like that, it's an ongoing thing. They will always have something on you.
But just not to stray from the actual topic, but it just registered to me, you know, like, it must be really difficult. I can understand a batsman or a bowler being captain. That person is on the field. A bowler can easily set the field to what he wants. But a wicketkeeper having to focus on keeping, I think that's the most difficult job, to be a wicketkeeper, batsman, captain. I never thought about it until this moment. And when I say thought about it, the coordination and what must happen when you're behind the stumps and you are the man who has the final say in terms of what goes on in that field and the keeping as well. Like, how hard is that? Was that very easy for you?
It is a very difficult and challenging job, especially when you're a captain and you have to look at all different aspects and perspective of the game under pressure, especially when you play in Asia, where there is probably thousands of people in the stands, and you have the likes of Virat on the go, Yuvraj, even Sachin, and all those players who have dominated and as world-class players. It's really challenging, especially the wickets are so good now. You know, good balls are getting hit for six and fours. Getting the right combination, the right bowling change. It's a really a high pressure game. And at the same time, when that ball is about to bowl, You have to zoom in and locked in. You know, you don't want to have to make a mistake. You don't want to drop this catch. You know, and then as the ball finishes, you have to focus on maybe a over or two ahead. Who should bowl the next over?
Correct. That's coordination.
So that's a really was a challenge. You know, but when you have good players, good bowlers in your team, and they understand the game, like the Bravos, the Pollard, the Gills, these guys would, you know, by the snap of the fingers, hey, we should use this guy in a particular position and go ahead while the opposition is trying to catch up with the game.
But in most cases, I mean, you, as I said, as a former captain, but somebody who's been behind the stump for a very long time. I mean, your grooming going into captaincy was something that you had that experience, because beside being the captain of the team, even before you became captain, you are somebody who the captain on the field would come to on a regular basis, because you're the man seeing everything behind that stump. And that gives you a broad vision of our view of the field in terms of what's happening. So even though I might be the captain on the field, I still have to come to you almost every over to say, hey, Shato, what is happening behind the stump? What is the ball doing? Do you think we need to bring up the fine leg? Do you need to push back the third man? Those kind of things. So I think for me, sometimes it's the best thing to have your captain being the wicket keeper in most cases.
It's a panoramic view when you're behind the stumps, or I would say a 360 view. And it's one of the best views in the house, especially, you know, I've seen so many world-class players, opposition score centuries, and growing up as a young player, seeing these guys on TV, now you're live, seeing them, you know, in front of you, performing, applying their trade. It's good and it's bad, you know, when you have to see them bat so long and you're behind the stumps. But was fantastic playing against some of these guys. But you know, when a captain comes to you, who should bowl, what's the bounce on the wicket like, you know, who should be bowling on which end is keeping a bit lower or spinning and stuff like that. You have the opportunity to make certain changes and change the momentum of a game and stuff like that. Sometimes the captain minds are so much confusing, who should bowl, which player in which position. And, you know, you could go to the captain, you know, have some sort of calmness to the game and, you know, slow the game down, or you know, help him in that perspective.
And Baja, while we're on this topic in terms of should we have legalized betting and gaming in cricket, before we go into our next segment, which is international versus franchise, I just want to make sure that the public and players who are watching this podcast know that if ever you are approached in any way for match fixing or spot fixing, please reach out to the ICC, because it's very important. Because you know, players sometimes just take for granted that somebody might say something to them, or they might get a message or something, and they'll be like, you know what, I'm not taking that on. I don't need to. You have to make sure that you have to report it. Whether it be a number, you might not have a name or whatever the case might be, just report it. At least you cover yourself and know that, hey, somebody reached out to me and I did report it, because these things can definitely affect.
Because the thing point to make it is that if you don't report it, you're just as guilty, correct?
Exactly. Which is in most cases unfair, because at the end of the day, these things are happening, and you do sometimes report people and nothing happens. And then you, the player, become a victim where you're left out of squad, you're left out of teams and stuff like that. So again, it's a 50-50 thing, but you want to make sure that nothing is used against you.
All right, let's move into our next segment. This segment is called International versus Franchise. And I can't wait to hear what Shota has to say about this. So, Shota, do you have a preference between international or franchise? And if you do, please say what. In other words, if you had to do it all over again, would you go down the road of international? Would you go to the West Indies? Or would you go down the road of cha-ching, cha-ching, where you could make a lot of money and you could also be richer?
I would choose international cricket. Test cricket is the ultimate. And if you're good enough and exceptional, all those things will take care of itself in terms of sponsorship deals, you know, bat deals, telephone companies, car companies, all those things will be coming towards you, and you'll
be excellent.
You will be earning a lot of money.
Yes.
At the same time, you know, there will be gaps in the year where you'll be able to play some sort of franchise cricket, and all those things will take care of itself. But international mm-hmm. cricket is number one. Mm-hmm. Playing against the best players in the world, you know, that's number one for me, and I'm sure that should be for any young player coming through the ranks. T20 franchise cricket is taking over, yes, but at the same time, you know, playing Test cricket, the ultimate, a T50 over World Cup, a T20 World Cup, you know, those things, you know, doesn't come or to achieve certain things like that.
Yeah,
it's a big mark.
A follow-up question. Shut up. You really think that Test cricket is the ultimate?
It is. It is in terms of all the strategy, the mind. Yeah, it is. It tests everything. Your mental strength, your physical. There's different parts of the game you have to assess after the first day's play, the second, by the time the third day's play, the ball is spinning, it's bouncing, different players, different conditions. There's so many different things. The red ball always doing something. In terms of the white ball, it swings for what, 5-6 overs?
I can't remember how it feels when you say this. I can't remember. We have Karen coming up on this show soon. I can't wait to hear what he has to say, because I'm going to tell him that the Rambit said that time cricket is the ultimate. What do you say?
Well, I mean, when you look at Dinesh's career in terms of someone who has played over 70 test match, that is a lot of cricket, and yeah. Shatter played first class cricket for Trinidad for a very long time. He made his debut at a very young age, so test cricket for him was what made him, and with that kind of experience back then, test cricket was it. When I played, you had a lot of test cricket. Yes, you also had a lot of 50-over cricket as well. But for me, because my cricket was different in terms of my style of playing, I definitely preferred the shorter version of the game. I played two test match in, 4 years? Mm-hmm. So I can't really speak much on test cricket. I can speak on the white ball.
But Shota can speak on both. So this is why I mean, come on. Like, and he's literally sitting here. Agent who makes money on him playing the short of the game that he loves test cricket.
As I mentioned, you know, my last test match, I finished it at 8:31, and I believe that's when I, you know, had learned so much about my career, my batting, my keeping in the last 10 years, and I think that was some of the best time for me, just coming back from Australia, doing well, and you know. It is what it is, and I believe that.
In other words, you weren't ready to have those gloves yet.
No, I wasn't. Came back in first class cricket, scored over close to 800 runs at average of 70 odd, and then you know the selectors were, you know, you still have more time on his hands, blah blah blah, you know, and you know I did what I had to do and control what I can, but yeah, I had still had a lot left in the tank. You know, if I get the opportunity now, I still feel I can play
at
that level.
For those people who are listening, they're trying to call me to much shorter. All right.
But that is something very, very important to note. And I'm happy that Shutter brought that up, because at age 30, 31, I remember the great Brian Lara told me that most cricketers start maturing at age 28. And when you get to age 31, you're now at the peak.
Yeah.
Of your career where you're now ready to take off. And the West Indian public and the West Indian selectors back then, and probably I'm not sure what it is now, but they feel that you're getting old once you pass 30, when this is the time when you are now mature, you understand your game, you know what works and what don't. And this is the time when you start bringing in somebody behind a shutter to start to groom them. But he has at least a good 8 years.
Yeah.
To really position a West Indies team to be able to start winning consistently. And that trend continues not only with Shatter, but other people who have now been matured enough to be able to perform consistently.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. I have no doubt what you have said, Derek. But at the same time, you know, these people have their views, who probably have never played quarter of the amount of test matches I have
played. These people have been West Indies selectors.
Yeah, and, you know, I think they know it all, who should play, who shouldn't play. And, you know, they change people at a very quick cycle. And you wouldn't get the results you want to. You know, you have to give people the opportunity to express themselves. And at that age that you mentioned, when you look at Adam Voges, he started about 32 or 34. Mike Hussey around 30.
Yeah.
You know, at our first class cricket, you don't play the amount of games that other countries played. So when you play 7 games a year and other countries play 10 and 12, in 3 years' time, you play close to 50, 40-odd games. Mm-hmm. West Indies play, you play 20. So when you look at the gap there and the experience, you know, it's a big gap. So with 5 years of first-class experience outside of the Caribbean with other teams, you know, it's good where you can have a good base in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
It's nothing really to talk about. And if a young guy does well, 5 wickets here, 2 centuries, he's the best thing on the market. He should be the next, you know, opening batsman, the best bowler. But then when you go to that level, you get exposed quite quickly and easily.
Yeah.
And then you have to come back down to first-class cricket. So,
yeah.
You know, first-class cricket needs to get a boost. It needs to get a lot more competitive. The wickets needs to change and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Just to say one thing, if we were to sit down and do a sum of the people who West Indies retired, I can't speak of your nation, you would notice, we would perhaps discover, and we could probably do a show on that, most people, if not one, were retired at their best. And that says something about the constant hills and valleys that the West Indies cricket team has been experiencing for the past 15 years.
Yeah, the chop and change too much in terms of, you know, different teams, different squads. And then, you know, now you see some guys playing, you know, and I look at telly and see their averages, you know, around 19 and 17, and they're batting number 3 for West Indies in Test cricket. You know, you really wonder what's going on, who really picks these teams and, you know, and stuff like that. So,
in the era of the great group, Sylvie Vinrickards and the great Courtney Walsh and Ambrose and Nogi and all these guys, if we were to look at how long they played for, it might explain the consistency in terms of results. Look at Jason, for example, who's a part of what we're Jason is at his peak right now. He's dominating first class cricket. Jason Mohammed.
Yeah.
And if you go back to the franchise, what you just mentioned now, a lot of younger players retiring from international cricket, younger, and they're going to the franchise because of the system, and they'll be paid more.
The system is broke.
Yeah, so, you know, when you have a good system in place, and what is important, the respect between the members of the board and the players. You know, if you respect the players, they will give you that respect. And if you don't have that, and there's a big breakdown there,
No signs.
Those days are done and over.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Yes. Well, I mean, we're on that in terms of discussing these things, re cricket and development, and when you should retire and when you should retire. I mean, we're supposed to be stepping into our next segment where it's going to be
asking
for a fan.
Yes.
It'll be interesting to hear what they have to ask Shutter.
Yeah, a fan question, Shutter. What do you think?
Dinesh, what was the most valuable lesson you had learned as a captain, wicket keepers, and a batsman for West Indies?
Most valuable lesson you learn as a batsman in a wicketkeeper for West Indies. And that's a fan from, it's India, I guess? Yeah.
I would say one of the most valuable lessons as a keeper first is understanding the conditions of the pitch, which gives you the opportunity when you go to bat, you'll have an advantage of some of the other players to bat a particular way on the wicket. If you feel first, and if you bat first, it's similar. You can tell your bowlers where you should bowl, which end, and which particular bowler should bowl on that end as well. I hope that answers the question.
Wow.
There's a lot of strategy that goes into cricket, and a lot of people don't understand. They think that on a given day, you just get up, turn up, and you play.
Play cricket.
Yeah, and they don't understand the homework pretty much that goes into going to a ground to practice the day before and looking at the pitch and coming back and having a team meeting and say, hey, you know, this week it have some grass on it, or it's a little bit dry, and this is going to happen the next day.
I just don't understand how
Yeah. Well, now with T20 cricket, I mean, there's nothing to watch. It's 20 overs. You turn up on your day and
you just pelt it. Yeah.
And you swipe on your pelt.
You smack a couple of balls. But just on one thing that Shatta mentioned earlier regarding test cricket, in terms of that experience, though, and just understanding what you have learned playing those 70-something test match, I think with the format now in terms of the whole international versus franchise thing, where players are going into franchise cricket but they're not experienced, and what you find in franchise cricket is that you have a lot of exceptional international players who are playing franchise cricket. And as a young player, if you go into franchise, especially playing the IPL, the Big Bash and stuff like that, and you don't have that experience, after the first year you're doomed, because they work you out in a minute, and you cannot withstand players who have played cricket for 15 years and they are at the top of their game. So what Shatta says is that playing at international cricket is also important, just like Hamilton and Finch and all these other guys who have said that you need a strong base before you can dominate any kind of franchise cricket.
Yeah, which is what guys like Bravo and Polly and Agots going inside, and others, obviously.
Yeah,
that's no doubt. In the great Sangakkara, Jack Callis, those guys who had that foundation of test cricket behind them, so many test matches, the Sachin, the Sehwag, and they came after and still dominated the white ball format, the T20, which is the fastest format at IPL, at franchises all over the world. And having that base is very important. When you understand your game to a certain level, and then you go into the T20, you don't do well for a couple of games, it breaks you mentally. And if you don't have that, you know, sort of number of test matches or first-class games behind you to understand your game, how should I get out of this position? You know, what should I do next? My mental, it's, you know, what's a more positive route I should take to get out of this? And a lot of players don't go there. You see they get dropped from the team. And then like, where's this player going? He started the IPL, he started the CPL, the Big Bash, and they're nowhere to be found. You know, being mentally strong and understanding cricket off the field as well is very important.
Yeah, there's a lot of ups and downs.
And that's why you are very successful as the league's captain. And that's why I'm proud to be a legend agent. I'm just saying, you know.
124 to the world.
24 to the world. All right. Is the Shutter upcoming Shutter Golf Tournament, which you've been an integral part of 124. You're having your second annual golf tournament in Trinidad and Tobago. Congratulations. It's amazing. So tell us some more about what's happening, when it's happening, what it's about. I mean, a lot of people don't know, and you hear the difference. The person is not only a professional cricketer with an amazing resume, but he's also a semi-pro golfer. That is, again, I mean, you're very talented to be able to use your hands to do all those things, come on.
Yeah, it's one of the hardest ball that doesn't move to hit, you know. You know, to get it where you want it to go, it doesn't go. And sometimes you try speaking to the ball, don't go here, drop, go here, and it doesn't. But this is the second annual golf tournament we're having at the Point of Pier Golf Club. It's the 7th of July. Last year was you know, exceptional. It was fun, the prizes, the players. Rick enjoyed the food.
I did because
so
I had a miserable time on the course. Luckily, I had a young pro with me who made me look good at the end of the day.
So you know, everyone is asking. You know, we had it carded for last month, you know, with the weather conditions, we couldn't.
So now, a drought,
yes. So hopefully in the next month or so, we get some rain and the course comes together proper so that, you know, you go out there, you enjoy golf, you enjoy the course, which is very important. And at the end of the day, you know, if you win prizes, you collect. If you don't, you enjoy the food.
So that's not about some of those prizes. And you have watches and oaky glasses and trips to somewhere. Prizes.
There's some really fantastic prizes. Resorts in Mayaro, you can go and spend a weekend with your family. As you mentioned, Oakley's glasses, watches, you know, a lot of equipment that, you know, we have in store for the golfers who you have machines where you can recover properly.
Wow.
And stuff like that. So hopefully I can get into some of those prizes myself.
No. I was jealous, and we had such a great time. You know, a lot of people in the golfing community comes out and support you guys, and you know, it's a lovely place to be. The vibe is right. You know, we saw guys like Richard Lara, you know, a good friend of ours, and some the guy who won, I'm trying to remember his name.
Ben Martin, he's the
Ben
pro,
Martin.
The
pro actually. And I think he won some other tournament. He went somewhere recently. I saw something on Instagram about that. But yeah, a lot of great golfers.
Yeah. I think for me, in terms of the tournament, I mean, watching someone like a Ben Martin at the end, because whilst playing, I was not able to follow him. But at the end, when they had that playoff, and just seeing a pro golfer up front hitting that ball, and the ball hitting and dropping like this much from the hole with one stroke. I mean, it's just amazing in terms of the time and effort that goes into this game. And I mean, for any cricketer, I think any cricketer who looking for a second sport to really play, I think golf is something that will definitely help.
Also, any batsman, between bowlers, no?
Yeah, anybody. I mean, it's just something that in terms of, from a ball point of view, in terms of hand-eye coordination, in terms of keeping your eyes on that ball and just having another sport to take your mind off cricket, because cricket sometimes can be very stressful and you need something to take that break. I mean, not that golf is any better, but at least you can.
I think people who go to golf, they get obsessed with golf. Listen, shut up. I'm sure Janelle wants to know this, right? Your wife. Which sport do you like the best between cricket and golf? Because we can't tell.
At the moment, it's golf. I retired from cricket, so
you're not
international. That's why we have this conversation. I retired from international cricket. I still play Legends, sort of.
Yes,
he does. So I do enjoy those tournaments because it's very short, it's compact, it's good. And then you enjoy golf. You come back home to your family, so it's really
good.
You love
your golf. You love your golf. Yeah.
Golf is important, you know.
Give your right name. Shut up. Always give your nickname, and now it's your golf brand. And
hopefully, in years to come, we expand the brand and the tournament to the states where you have, you know, maybe 1 year in India or something like that. You know, it's gonna be good to get it out there.
Yeah. Well, we're working on that, and on that note. Anything else we want to talk about? Just to invite, you know, to encourage people to register, and we have a few spaces left. Encourage golfers, wannabe golfers, and professional golfers to register for the upcoming Shutter Golf tournaments in Puerto Rico, Trinidad.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting again. You know, when I put out the first ad, there were about 15 to 20 teams, you know, in a couple of days' time, and we will only take close to 40 teams, excluding the pros. So those spaces are going to be full up fast, especially when, you know, the amateur golfers, they find out the prizes for second, third, you know, they gravitate, they start registering really quickly.
Yes,
and it's going to be nice. I just can't wait.
Well, sounds good. It sounds like it's going to be a movie, just like last year. Of course, we'll have coverage on Shutter Golf. It's on shuttergolf.com and Shutter 80 Instagram. Don't forget to follow Shutter on Instagram at Shutter 80 and 124 Nantel and 124 Nantel, Ricardo El Powell, you know, and subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you can see all the top cricketers. So, you know, here we like to say we do. Okay, he forgot again. We do big topics.
Topic.
I'm going to find a record of Paul as my
Fire
co-host for part two because he's never
and higher.
on
Fire and higher.
the
Just fire me and hire me.
This was so nice. We have to do it twice. I know we're going to have shots about many, many times. And I just want to say thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks for following. Thanks for the reviews. We're doing so well. We show to show with Ali and Cam and Stephen Taylor, Finch, Hamilton, and Monty has done so well on social media. Thank you so much for your support. We love you guys. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. It's your girl, Baja. Wake up, that's a wrap.
See ya.
Bye.
See you. Shut the AT to the world.
Shut the AT to the world. I'm trying to find those credits. Oh my God. Bye.